Long time no speak. This is the Cory Doctorow podcast, and for a change, it's a Monday, and I'm actually in my office and standing in front of the microphone. And I warn you, this will be the last time for a couple of weeks as well, because I'm about to hit the road again. Since the last time I spoke to you, I've been to the American Library Association in Chicago, Computers, Freedom, and Privacy in D.C., and most recently this weekend to the Maker Faire London meetup at the Victoria and Albert Museum, and have done lots of talks and lots of travel and put up with a lot of jet lag and even had a little bit of surgical back procedures in there. So it's been a busy, busy time. And as I intimated, it's not exactly over. On Friday, I leave for San Diego to teach the Clarion Workshop, week number four. And every spare minute I've had has been taken up with reading the manuscripts from that workshop as the students write them. They're really good. The students at this year's Clarion are intimidatingly awesome, and I'm really looking forward to meeting them. You can meet them too. If you're in the San Diego area, I'm going to be giving a talk at Mysterious Galaxies, the amazing San Diego area science fiction bookstore. All the instructors do readings and signings at Mysterious Galaxy while the workshop is on. So I hope you'll come out and see that. You can find details if you just Google it, Mysterious Galaxy Doctorow Clarion, you'll find it. I'll also be speaking at the San Diego Comic-Con and attending it, so maybe I'll run into you there. The other thing I've been doing since the last time I spoke to you is working hard on that short story I mentioned, the novella, The Man Who Sold the Moon, which is for this Arizona State University anthology, the Hieroglyph Project that Neal Stephenson started. That's going very well. I'm writing 500 words a day, every weekday, and it's part of the Clarion Write-A-Thon, which is a fundraiser at clarionwriteathon.com, where you can sponsor the story and the money goes to help support the Clarion Writers Workshop, which is a cause I really believe in. I volunteer on the board and I'm a graduate and obviously I teach as well. Now, what I'm going to read to you today is a column I wrote about PRISM and dragnet surveillance for The Guardian that The Guardian published under the title The NSA's PRISM, Why We Should Care. It may have even been my title. It's one that's been widely cited and reprinted since it was published, so I thought I would give you a crack at it here in the audio. It's a little shorty, because I'm running around reading Clarion manuscripts today, but I hope it'll tide you over till the next time I speak to you. Here we go. The revelations about PRISM and other forms of NSA dragnet surveillance have got some people wondering what all the fuss is. When William Hague tells us that the innocent have nothing to fear from involuntary disclosure, it raises questions about exactly what harms might come about from being spied upon. Here are some reasons you should care about privacy, disclosure, and surveillance. We're bad at privacy because the consequences of privacy disclosures are separated by a lot of time and space from the disclosures themselves. It's like trying to get good at cricket by swinging the bat, closing your eyes before you see where the ball is headed, and then being told months later somewhere else where the ball went. So of course we're bad at privacy. Almost all our privacy disclosures do no harm, and some of them cause grotesque harm, but when this happens, it happens so far away from the disclosure that we can't learn about it. You should care about privacy, because privacy isn't secrecy. I know what you do in the toilet, but that doesn't mean you don't want to close the door when you go in the stall. You should care about privacy, because if the data says you've done something wrong, then the person reading the data will interpret everything else through that light. Naked Citizens, a short free documentary, documents several horrifying cases of police being told by computers that someone might be up to something suspicious, and thereafter interpreting everything they learn about that suspect as evidence of wrongdoing. For example, when a computer programmer named David Mary entered a tube station wearing a jacket in warm weather, an algorithm monitoring the CCTV brought him to the attention of a human operator as someone suspicious. When Mary let a train go by without boarding, the operator decided it was alarming behavior. The police arrested him, searched him, and asked him to explain every scrap of paper in his flat. A doodle, consisting of random scribbles, was characterized as a map of the tube station. Though he was never convicted of a crime, Mary is still on file as a potential terrorist 8 years later and can't get a visa to travel abroad. Once a computer ascribes suspiciousness to someone, everything else in that person's life becomes sinister and inexplicable. You should care about dragnet surveillance because it gives the cops bigger haystacks with proportionately fewer needles. The 9/11 Commission said that America's spooks had everything they needed to predict the attacks, but it was lost amid the noise of all the overcollected data. Since then, the overcollection has gone into overdrive. The haystacks are enormous, but they still have the same number of needles in them. I want my skies safe, just like you, so I want my spooks doing their job well, not simply sucking up all the data, in the hopes that it'll be useful someday. You should care about surveillance, because you know people who can be compromised through disclosure. People who are gay and in the closet. People with terminal illnesses. People who are related to someone infamous for some awful crime. These people are your friends, your neighbors, maybe your kids. They deserve a life that's as free from hassle as you are with your lucky skeleton-free closet. You should care about surveillance, because once the system for surveillance is built into the networks and the phones, bad guys or dirty cops can use it to attack you. In Greece, someone used the police backdoor on the national phone company's switches to listen in on the prime minister during the 2005 Olympic bid. Chinese hackers used Google's lawful interception backdoor to hack Gmail and figure out who dissidents talk to. Our communication systems are more secure if they're designed to keep everyone out, and adding a single backdoor to them blows their security models up. You can't be a little bit pregnant, and the computers in your pocket and on your desk and in your walls can't be a little bit insecure. Once they're designed for surveillance, anyone who can bribe or impersonate a cop can access them. And as for William Hague, if the innocent have nothing to fear from disclosure, then why did his own government demand an unprecedented system of secret courts in which evidence of UK intelligence complicity in illegal kidnapping and torture can be heard? Privacy, it appears, is totally essential for the powerful and completely worthless for the rest of us. Now, I should mention, now that I've read that column to you, that I heard from David Mary afterwards, and he clarified a few things for me. It turns out that he disputes that he let a train go by. He says he was about to board a train when the cops swarmed him and jumped him. He also says that it was a cop's individual suspicion and not a computerized suspicion that initially put the cops onto him, but that thereafter, the computers generated all kinds of suspicion about him, and he spent years and years and continues to try to clear his name entirely. Anyway, that's the lot, and I'll speak to you in about 3 weeks when I'm back from Clarion, and I hope I see some of you at Comic-Con, Mysterious Galaxy, or at the Clarion Workshop. If you're listening to me, students, I'm here, I'm reading your manuscripts, and I'm on my way. Otherwise, have a great summer. Bye.
You've been listening to the Cory Doctorow Podcast, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike US 3.0. Or as Woody Guthrie put it in another context, this song is copyrighted in the US under Seal of Copyright 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ourn, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it, we wrote it, that's all we wanted to do. Many thanks to John Taylor Williams for mastering. That's Ryneck Studio, Ryneck Studio at gmail.com. John Taylor Williams is a full-time self-employed audio engineer, producer, composer, and sound designer. In his free time, he makes beer, jewelry, odd musical instruments, and furniture. He likes to meditate, to read, and to cook. Talk to you next week.